Blipty Center every once in a while.
Hey, everybody. That is Gary Smith.
Hello.
That is Kaz Kenny.
Kapow!
And I am Eddie Bramlin. This is episode 49?
49.
49 of the Black Wizards
49, 49. One more with the big 5-0, baby.
That's it. So start us off this week's Fishing Report.
I got to tell you what, fishing has really sucked.
No, not in February.
It's not because it's cold. It's not because there's ice in the water. It's not because the water's 32 degrees. Been tough, folks. So fishing-wise, it's been blue cats most places. Marshy Hope, if you've been watching Cornflower with that big blue cat, life.com, you can see all his shenanigans he's got going on over there 24 hours a day because he doesn't sleep. And that's all he does is go fishing. So we know blue cats are over there in Marshy Hope. We know we're catching penny blue cats in the Nanticoke. I'm hearing some yellow perch in Nanticoke. There's a lot of yellow perch in Nanticoke. You know, they're in there. They're just waiting to go. The Marshy Hope's got quite a few yellow perch in it, too. The upper chop tank's got quite a few yellow perch up in there, too. So just waiting for the temperatures to get right and for them to start breaking loose. White perch are staged outside the mouths of most of the rivers here on the eastern shore, especially down in Fishing Bay and places like that out in the Honga River. You know, these white perch are getting ready to take a run here. If you're out and you do get a warm day and you can get out on the water and you find some deep holes,
tear them up.
You can get down to them white perch with a tandem jig, you know, two jigs and a little weight on the bottom and just bounce that off the bottom real slow and just watch your fish finder. You should be able to pick up some nice perch. Some of the white perch that I've been seeing coming in here are 13, 14 inches. So there's some big stuff out there.
There's some slabs, yeah.
Oh, God. And then Smithville Lake, I'm hearing there's a few panfish being caught up there, pickerel, a few bass, spillway. If you take your gig with you, you might be able to gig a snakehead or two up there after dark, so check that out. Severn River, I'm talking to some folks up there. It's pickerel and yellow perch, a few white perch here around and about. That's about the same place everywhere else. Magathie River, same thing, pickerel, yellow perch up there. The reservoirs, Loch Raven, all them places, everybody I'm talking to, it's crappy. It's some yellow perch, a few bass, and a lot of pickerel. So that's really good to see. I also know that my cousin JR got his muskie off his bucket list. So congratulations on that there, JR. Glad to see you got that done. What else we got? Conowingo Lake above the dam up at Peach Bottom. They're catching some really nice walleye, some striped bass, quite a few muskies. I got a friend who's caught three here in the last couple weeks. Big ones, too. Lower Susquehanna, it's yellow perch, it's walleye, it's crappie, it's blue cats everywhere, flatheads, a little bit of everything. So you just don't know what you're going to catch out there in that deep water, especially on the backside of the island down there. So I know them guys are catching some yellow perch and stuff like that. A lot of the marinas there, you know, they're catching yellow perch, catching bass, catching a few things in the Lower Susquehanna River, stuff like that, you know. Before I forget, last week, you know, we had that rod that could have gone up. And Gary's got that in his hand right here. So if you know Matt Fletcher's PB, his biggest snakehead he's ever caught.
Nobody correctly guessed
nope,
it last
nobody
week.
Guessed it. So
no, if you know it, you can't play. If you don't
yeah, know if, it, if you know it, you can't it. Play, and you're not going to win. But if you don't know it and you guess it right, then you can win this rod for free.
That's a nice rod.
That is a nice rod. Beautiful rod.
$180 rod, $200 rod, you know what I mean? So can't beat that. That was
all
a nice,
you had to do was know it.
That was a nice donation from Matt. You know what I mean? We didn't expect that comment. And I'll tell you what, these are really, really quality stuff. I mean, the wraps he's got on these things, the eyes, I mean, the stoutness of these rods. I mean, I might take that thing over Gary's tomorrow and go try that on some bluegills, see what happens. You never know, you know? See how good that thing really is. So, I mean, that's about where we are with the fishing report everywhere. You know, same thing you don't know if you don't go. You know, that's what I tell everybody. Are they biting here? I'm not going to tell you. Come down and find out. You know, if you search far enough, long enough, you're going to find what you're looking for, you know? So, bait is the answer right now. Bait. So make sure you get a hold of Damien and Cornflower over there at the Bait Boys. If you guys need minnows, grass, shrimp, anything like that, we've got plenty of it coming in for stock. That's about what I got on the fishing report. We've got nobody's guessed the fishing rod, so you still got opportunity to get that.
That's a good deal. You better tell them that again.
Maybe yeah, let's show them again. So look, so here's the thing. We still got this rod up for the giveaway, okay? Yes. All you have to do is guess Matt Fletcher's personal best on snakehead, okay? And keep in mind that we're going to be offering the limited edition snake skin wrapped rods here at the Wolford store. If you want to order any of them, you can get a hold of us here at the store, and Eddie can get them, you know, ordered for you, or you can get a hold of Matt, and we'll get them ordered in for you.
Yep, so. Matt's working on them. So that it?
That's about it. That's how
man, that's a quick fishing report.
Was it
man.
Really, man?
That's,
4 minutes?
We're only 4 minutes into
this thing.
Do you want
to make some more? I can make some stories up.
No, we wouldn't need okay. stories. But.
We got a good show today, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of good stuff to talk about. And we're going to talk about tournaments. We're going to talk about snakeheads. We're going to talk about the CCA, baby.
CCA. That's what it's all about. Speaking of CCA, this week we've got Dave Skorsky on here from CCA. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well, gentlemen.
Big Dave, what's up, buddy?
What's up is 4, maybe 5 inches of snow outside my window in Baltimore. So.
Not fun. Not fun.
We don't have anything here if you want to come down here and hang out.
We still got grass and blacktop.
Dead grass.
It might be snowing now.
I think last time I saw you guys all together was, what, back in May or so, last time we did a podcast. I know I left my boots at Gary's house and my cooler, so.
It's been a hot minute.
I do need to make it down there. I have driven by a couple times throughout the hunting season, and I felt guilty. I didn't take the time to catch up. But,
I've only loaned him out a couple times, man.
I told you that was him driving by, and we should have been throwing rocks at him.
Yeah, rubber when it sets for a long time gets kind of stiff, so you got to work it every once in a while.
That's right. You can't let him go stale, for sure.
I'll tell you, you can't imagine how many times I walked around my garage looking for those boots. I went, where did I leave them? And I leave stuff all over.
I'm sorry, man. I forgot to tell you. I think I told you one time.
Yeah, you probably did. You know, it is what it is. But Kaz, I love that fishing report. You know, when we were talking before, I forgot to mention that CCA has had our Pickerel Championship tournament running since December 1st. It ends on February 28th. And it's a 3-fish stringer event, and there's different categories and stuff. This year we have 80 people participating. It's all based on iAngler, and there's 308 fish submitted so far. The biggest pickerel is a 27 and a quarter incher, and I know that was caught in an impoundment on the eastern shore somewhere. The biggest yellow perch is a 13 and a half incher, and the biggest crappie right now is 14 and a quarter.
I better go fishing.
Yep. So there's some top-notch anglers catching some big fish, and we've got really cool prizes coming up. So, you know, folks are in that. Thank you for participating. You can still sign up, technically. It's open until the 28th, and so folks could sign up and get out there fishing and still compete for some good prizes. We've got really cool trophies on the way for this one.
I'll tell you what, you're doing just an amazing job with this whole invasive thing that you guys are doing, Dave. I can't thank you enough, and I think this really opened up a big world to the angler now. You know, being that we can see where some of the stuff's being caught and some of the things that they're using, and you know, it's building the community. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I think exactly what we talked about last year was the great Chesapeake Invasives Count. It's an event we kicked off last June 1st, and I'm really proud to say that it was a success last year. We gave away lots of prizes for folks to participate. We couldn't do it without iAngler Tournament, and behind iAngler is the Angler Action Foundation. And if folks check out Angler Action Foundation online, I think it's angleraction.org or angleractionfoundation.org.
What is the Angler Action Foundation? Tell us a little about it.
So they're an organization, you know, with the same mindset that you guys have, the same mindset that CCA has. It's about anglers being informed and educated, helping make a positive difference in the future. The executive director of Angler Action is my good friend, Brett Fitzgerald. I had him on one of our What's on the Line podcasts in CCA a while back. They're actually on our website, ccamd.org/podcast. So if folks want to listen to that, I think it's episode 9 or 10 or something. Brett is a great guy, just an obsessed angler who goes fishing every minute he can. I mean, he's a professional speech pathologist in his full-time job, but
that's
also
cool.
works part-time for the Angler Action Foundation. And really the core of the work they've done started back in, I think it was a really cold freeze in Florida that killed a lot of fish. And managers had no way to understand what was happening in the fishery quickly, because fisheries management is always a slow process. It takes a while with all the data, and it's always kind of looking backwards. Well, the Florida managers needed really good information, so what better way than to connect with the anglers who are out there on the water observing what's happening? So that's when the iAngler app was developed, and it was developed to help managers understand how many snook were out there, how many redfish, how many trout. Because so many fish had died in the cold stun, the last thing managers and anglers wanted to see happen was, you know, these populations really be impacted. So they all came together, they captured some data, and what they were able to do was really get a good picture of what's happening on the water. And it ended up opening seasons more quickly, because managers didn't have to rely on old and long, you know, these massive data sets that take a while to process. They were getting information directly from anglers. So that's really the basis of iAngler and the Angler Action Foundation, and it's why we have the tool available in the iAngler Tournament app to run fishing tournaments, which are fun and, you know, great competition. But behind that, we collect data, and that is really the foundation of the Great Chesapeake Invasives Count. I've been fortunate enough to be on the Sport Fish Advisory Commission. I now chair a committee of that focuses on tidal and coastal issues. We try and bring recreational anglers together to advise Maryland DNR on how to manage our fisheries. And after more than a decade now of sitting into fisheries conversations, you realize data and science drives everything. Mm-hmm. Anecdotal information and what's happening on the water is really important too. Quite often folks feel like they aren't listened to, and that's a big part of my job, is making sure that anglers' voices are heard. But the reality is you got to have data to do science-based management. And I know you guys have talked a lot about the great work that folks like Joe Love and various partners in Fish and Wildlife and within Maryland DNR are doing to try and understand the impacts of snakeheads. Well, they don't have a dedicated invasive species program in Maryland DNR.
They don't.
They can't afford it.
Yep. You know? And that's the problem they're running into, like you're saying, is just the data collection. I mean, it takes so long to collect the data for the scientific research to base your policies on. It just takes forever to get anything done.
By the time you get it done, it's changed anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I don't want to blow the whistle on something, but we're working with an organization in the Upper Bay right now to put a program together with them to where their students, you know, when they're there on their weekly tours. We're going to put in place, and they're going to catch the snakeheads. We're going to teach them how to set nets there. And then we're going to let the kids, you know, gut sample the fish and dissect the fish basically, and teach them about the snakeheads at this organization. It is a nonprofit organization in the Upper Bay. And once everything is through there, then I will go ahead and announce the name and let everybody know what's going on with that. But we're also looking to get permits, to do some studying at this location, also outside and away from, you know, the stream side. You know, we want to get in the lab, put some in a tank, do some color options and some things like that. And I told them that I would help them with that, you know. So we want to try to look at, you know, the intelligence of the fish. We want to look at, you know, the growth of the fish in the Upper Bay. We want to do scale sampling. We want to do gut sampling. We want to do all that. And we figure that with the amount of kids that are coming through this program, this would be an easy way for us to gather, you know, a couple hundred, maybe another couple thousand gut checks a year. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And where this place is located on the flats, it's just a perfect place for us to do this, you know, and they are on board 100% and they want to do something too. So I'm really looking forward to getting you involved with that on this end with us on that program too. So a lot of good stuff coming together, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And with the invasives count, like I said, it's all about driving data, just like kind of the information you were just talking about. And we did ask for gut contents and lengths and weights, and it was snakeheads and invasive catfishes. You know, the blue cats are everywhere now.
Right.
And we're all going to, a decade from now, look back and go, okay, that's what happened. I mean, you can sit here all day long and talk about what might happen.
Right.
You guys are seeing massive changes in your environment down there. There's changes happening all over the place. And I know there's this ongoing debate about, do we manage snakeheads, you know, for catch and release versus keeping them, and should we make them a game fish and all this kind of stuff. And all these things are kind of confused, nuanced conversations. And the reality is, no matter what somebody wants the outcome to be for snakeheads, we need data, because the state law and the way that the professionals at Maryland DNR operate is based on science, and they have to have that tell the story. And so, you know, we had 92 participants last year, log 198 fish. That data has been submitted to Maryland DNR.
198 snakeheads?
Well, it was mostly snakeheads. It was a combination of blue catfish, flatheads, and snakeheads.
Okay.
But mostly snakeheads. And that information has been provided to DNR without anybody's names, because anything that DNR gets is, you know, subject to Public Information Act and all that kind of stuff. So we completely conceal the people's names. We just provide the length, the weight, and the pictures of the fish. If DNR needs the pictures
and the location, if they provide, they don't have to provide the location, correct?
Well, so yeah, in the invasives count, we did require the location in order for them to receive a prize.
Okay.
Well, the location is just the river, not the.
Exactly.
Not the yeah. Yeah. Cord. We didn't need a GPS cord. That's what I want to stress to people, you know, that if you're turning in your data and you're turning in, you know, something you've done, that, you know, you don't have to put exactly where you were.
It's okay. Kaz can't read latitude and longitude anyway.
I can read pictures. That's about it.
Well, and that's so folks absolutely have the option in the angler, in the iAngler tournament app to turn off their location settings, but they can turn it on. And a lot of people do, because a lot of folks recognize that we're not providing the information publicly to anyone.
Sure.
And it's just simply for DNR to try and put together a plan so they can address the management of these species for the general public. And it's the outcomes. You know, folks can't forecast an outcome and just say, I'm not doing that because I think they're going to do this with the information. Well, you know, I can respect that opinion and all that kind of thing, but I'd urge folks to get involved. And, you know, my phone number is all over the place. If folks want to get into the nitty gritty and details of fisheries management and how it works, I'm very fortunate to be in a position to work in this arena every single day on behalf of anglers and behalf of the resource. And another hat I wear is something called the Marine Resource Education Program. It helps teach people about how to get involved in fisheries management. And then I'm also now just appointed to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission as the legislative proxy. So the coastwide body that manages rockfish and cobia and spot and croaker and all these other fish that live throughout the Atlantic coast, this is the body that has to sit down and work together and represent every state up and down the coast and try and figure out how to manage our resources. And it's never easy, but I'm happy to be there on the front lines on behalf of anglers. So if anybody has questions about how all this stuff comes together, it's a big part of my day to day. And, you know, we want folks to just be involved and be educated and be informed anglers, just like you guys always talk about. It's such an important part of our community. And you know, what we need to do together. So for the Great Invasive Species Count for this year, we're kicking off April 1st. You know, it was kind of a put together at the last minute last year, but this year we've got a much longer timeline here. So April 1st, it's gonna go live. We'll have registrations probably around March 1st. And we're looking for folks to support the event. The basic structure is starts April 1st, ends October 31st. We figured that captures a good chunk of the time of year where folks are going to be catching a bunch of snakeheads and be out fishing because the weather's nice. So that just seemed like a good window, that 7-month period there.
I think it's great.
And yeah. And what we're asking is, you know, folks like you guys to step up and say, all right, we're willing to be a partner. We want to help promote it. I think what we're going to do is break things up into region, but also break things up into month to month and give folks an opportunity to like do a takeover of social media platforms and just, you know, share as much information as we can about snakeheads, blue cats, their impact, you know, tips and techniques, how we're going fishing for them, the great tackle that's available, you know, some of the great programs that you guys are running down with the store and Blackwater's Edge. I mean, it's great to, you know, that we can all work together like this and have the technology like iAngler, where anywhere you're going fishing, you can submit a picture of that fish and provide data to DNR and possibly win a prize. So we'll probably do monthly prizes over the 7-month period. Last year we gave away a bunch of great prizes from AFCO and Engel coolers and all sorts of good stuff. And there will be incentives for people that are CCA members. Anybody can become a CCA member. Just go to ccamd.org/join. And if you are an active member, you get better prizes, but anybody can participate in the Great Chesapeake Invasives Count for free. Doesn't cost you anything, and you can still win some prizes.
And I'm looking here, you know, my good friend Rob Ballantyne, he's a biologist, and he's watching right now, and he said, anglers need to get on board with reporting. We've had 50-plus snakehead days last spring, you know, so.
Well, another thing, too, is if you're gut sampling your fish as you catch them or when you get done, if you do it as you're catching them, that's one of the preferred methods of euthanizing them.
Right, yep. Exactly.
Great point.
In legal ways.
Right.
If you've got, you don't have to whack him on the head. Or,
yeah, there's no chance that he's going to survive that. Right. That's just point blank period.
Man. You never know, man. Snakes on a plane, bro.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I got tons of great pictures of folks. I mean, one of the guys, Dave McCullum, who is an Upper Bay angler.
You know, I know really Dave. He's a hell of an angler, man. I love that guy.
Yeah, I was talking to him today. He won 2 Engel coolers, an AFCO knife, and I ended up getting to the point where I said, Dave, you can't win anything anymore. You're catching so many fish.
He's a good fisherman.
Yeah, so he caught 193 snakeheads last year. Mm. Not a single one was below Pools Island. So if you think about that, it's the Upper Bay, the very Upper Bay. Dave caught all those 193, basically in the Susquehanna Drain, you know, right there in below the dam.
I know where he fishes.
Yeah, and I mean, there was one creek in particular that you couldn't believe how many he caught, and he wouldn't care if I said it, but I'm not going to. But the bottom line is they're everywhere, right? And there's got to be impacts we don't quite know, and, you know, think about striped bass. They're staging the spawn right now, and we've really got to do our part. You guys have been preaching it for a long time, and it's a big deal. So, you know, we're not out to find people's spots or anything like that, but we're here to do our part as anglers and stand up, and guess what? You'll be rewarded for it.
I think as anglers, we have a responsibility to our waterways for that. You know, that's all. That's just the bottom line, you know, period. So.
What do they say to one to people that much is given, much is expected? That's not right. What's the quote? I don't know. There's some famous saying.
Close enough. We won't.
I like it.
Much is expected.
That's right.
Too much is given, much is expected.
So last year, you know, the invasive things went really good, and we have a good feeling that it's going to be probably, I would think with the exposure you got last year, that you're going to at least double that this year, I would think, you know, and that's at least what I would like to see happen for you guys anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I think the best thing that we can do is, like we've said, help each other to promote this stuff back and forth and get the word out. And we know it's going to be different everywhere. But the bottom line is, like you did say, Dave, there's going to be an ultimate impact somewhere, and it's going to be felt in some way. You know, where it's going to be for each of these rivers and creeks and stuff individually, nobody knows. You know, we're watching some places just fall apart. You know, we're watching other places not fall apart so much. We're seeing small bass still there. We're seeing some bluegills still there. You know, and then we're seeing other places that might not even be seeing much of anything yet. You know, time takes time. That's the biggest thing that I don't think people look at in this whole picture. You know, we just can't make a judgment today. You know, I know from what we've seen in the Blackwater study, you know, that's data and that's factual data, and that backs up what we've seen here. You know, the only way to get the right scenario nailed down for each of these rivers and creeks is, like you said, to collect the data. And the only way we can do that is if the anglers get involved and utilize this iAngler. So everybody out there that's paying attention and doing this, I think we just lost Dave.
Yeah, I think we just lost Dave. We'll get him back.
But yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that if we all work together and we all just try to help one another, you know, this isn't about who's a better angler, who catches more, who does this or not. So we'll get you back in a minute, Dave. We're coming.
We got your voice, man. We're close.
He must have lost service.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, the biggest thing that we're seeing here is the numbers. You know, I mean, the numbers are just pretty crazy. Now, I do know that I've talked to Justin.
I'm back.
He set some nets in some different areas this year. So we're going to start looking at some other areas in Blackwater that we haven't netted yet and see what we see in these new areas. And I can tell you that from just what we're seeing in the last 2 weeks, and we're not even hot yet, I have a feeling that these nets are really going to load up. And when I say load up, I think we're going to see a couple thousand pounds a week coming out of these nets up where we're at, mm-hmm. You know? So I'm really glad to see that Justin moved the nets to a new area, you know, that way we can work on a new area to get some snakeheads out of.
Them in the old places too.
But yeah, I mean, they're still in the old places, yeah. But, I mean, the biggest thing is this. Even still in Blackwater, I was talking to Chris Meister the other day, okay? Now right now at 335, when you're over there top and bottom, you know, bottom fishing, you know, top and bottom rig with a piece of bloodworm or a minnow, you could catch two yellow perch at a time, and you could have your limit there literally in 20 minutes. You know, you could be done, 10 fish. We still have not seen any yellow perch in the net yet. Not one. You know, Meister went over there the other day and sat there for a couple hours. Nothing. Kept calling me. He's like, man, I don't know. I said, try the other side. Try this. Try that. So, I mean, there's definitely impacts, and we definitely see it here. You know, and some of the guys I'm talking to up there, I got a friend at Nets of Gunpowder. He's telling me, you know, that the yellow perch numbers he's seeing this year are not quite what they were last year at all, 50%. I got some guys over in the Bush River outside the Amtrak's got nets set. And same thing there. I mean, there's just not the numbers of fish. Guys that I'm talking to up in Gray's Run, I mean, that's a place that's indicted with millions of them little yellow perch. I hear them guys aren't really seeing much of that at all yet. So I don't know what's going on, you know? I mean, it kind of just throws curveballs everywhere, you know? It's like you expect one thing, and then this is happening, and then you have to take two steps back and regroup and think about what you're really looking at, you know? And just from what I'm seeing, I mean, the people I'm talking to, the Gunpowder, the Bush River, I mean, the Susquehanna. I mean, the Susquehanna I'm not hearing too much, you know? Not too much in the way of change. But like these other smaller rivers, I mean, you're seeing stuff happen there faster. You know, the Gunpowder, Day's Cove. I mean, Day's Cove is like a mosquito. It's got so many, it's like mosquitoes here on the Eastern Shore, no lie. So, you know, I mean, we don't know, you know, and like you said, that's why it's so important for us to collect this data. That's why it's so important for us to get, you know, these gut samples and to see what's going on, get these links and get some growth, you know, see what they're growing, how fast things are happening, you know. The good thing about Rob Ballantyne, who was just, I was talking to you a minute ago, now he's done some of his own independent studies on growth plates, and he's a guy, I think, Dave, that would be really, really useful for CCA, and he might be able to help you guys with aging some fish, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like maybe
yeah.
If somebody sent in scales, you know, he could take the scales and he could age those fish out, and then we could see really, you know what, just a random thought, you know? I mean, this is a way that we can maybe see how fast they're growing too, you know what I mean? And what does a one-year-old snakehead in the Bush River look like? Because we know a one-year-old snakehead here can be 14 inches and reproducing and reproducing in 8 to 9 months.
Right.
You know? That's those are the kind of surveys and studies that actually shape things like striped bass management. You know, DNR is out there in the field doing young of year surveys and taking scales off of big fish, off the little fish, and doing all that kind of stuff. Well, they don't have the capacity. Like we said earlier, they don't have an invasive species program. They can barely get done with the work they need to get done on every fishery.
Right.
So they don't have the capacity to do this thing. So exactly what you're talking about is the mentality that inspired iAngler, inspired the Great Invasives Count. CCA has, we call this citizen science, right? And it's not perfect. It never is.
Sure.
You always have to work with the experts to talk to them about data collection and the information they want so it's usable. And that's what we're doing. I just had that call this week with, you know, the inland fisheries folks at Maryland DNR so they could help guide me in making our event better this year. And then a whole other piece of the puzzle of things we do is a tagging program where CCA members can participate through the American Littoral Society. And we actually tag rockfish, bluefish, flounder, you know, some bigger fish. So, you know, it's these kinds of things, again, where it's anglers stepping up to help out a little bit, you know, find out some really cool information. And frankly, if you get involved in the science of fisheries and helping out with surveys and data and all that, you become a better angler. And, I mean, how many the guys that keep the good logbooks are the guys that continually catch the most fish because they have that data and that experience, right? And I don't know, you know, it's fun stuff and folks need to get involved.
It's kind of funny because, like, when I share my gut content pictures with people, you know, I mean, the first thing that we talk about, the first thing they say to me is, good Lord, man, why do you have so many? And I have so many so that I can kind of, gut sampling has really helped me as an angler, you know, to choose the correct lures.
Exactly.
To choose the correct size of baits. There's a side to gut sampling that I don't think a lot of anglers see. And I know some anglers see it as, oh, they're just killing the fish and ripping it apart. For me, it's a learning avenue. You know, when I open that fish up and I'm flaying that fish and I want to check the stomach, I'm checking that stomach because I'm compiling my own data in my own brain of what these fish are eating. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm able to take that back to the store or to a tackle shop and kind of infuse what I've already learned through the gut sampling in my lure selection for my next trip, you know? So yep. You try to find, we can find bad points. We can find good points about everything, but I try to find the good points in what I'm doing. You know, what is the outcome of what I'm doing going to be? You know, and I know what the outcome is. It's going to be dinner. I know that. But I'm just saying, I mean, we learned last year that, you know, I mean, these fish could eat a 6-pound carp with no problem.
That's what I was just about to say.
When
I mean,
you don't know until you open the fish, you don't know if he's eating something 3 inches long.
Sure.
4 inches long, 10 inches long, whatever.
And the other thing, like big fish, you know, I was able to pattern my bigger fish through gut sampling. And that's the God's honest truth, you know? When I started chasing bigger fish, I paid attention to what they were eating. That opened a big door for me, to be honest with you.
Well, what do you always say? Match the hatch.
Yeah, match the hatch. That's it. Yeah, but
you can't match it if you don't know what they're eating.
But how many times did I come back to you a couple years ago? Dude, I told you, man, 6-inch bluegill open. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, I just Ricky had a 32-inch snakehead that had a 24-inch channel cat in its stomach. I mean, it was in there.
Well, just like Alex's bowfish in the tournament. Yeah. It was 26 inches, and it had an 18-inch snakehead in its belly, just hanging out its mouth. Yep. So.
And that was legit. And that was legit. That was not a stage thing. When the DNR pulled that out of his mouth, I mean, the back end of that snakehead had already hit the stomach acid and was rotting away. What a lot of people don't understand, too, is these snakeheads have one of the fastest digestive systems of any fish out there. So once they eat, if you can't get in there, a lot of guys will say, I got my fish home, there was nothing in it, man, when I opened it up. I've opened 9 of them up, and there ain't nothing in it out of 10.
That's why they bit your lure.
Of course, that's why they ate your lure. They were hungry. Their stomach was empty. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean.
I was about to say that one of the guys that we had in the tournament kept providing, he'd take a picture of his fish, tell us how long it was. If he weighed it, he told us how much it weighed. But then in the notes section, because you can add notes, he would say, stomach empty, full of eggs. And explain all that kind of stuff. And I think the vast majority of the fish he caught were stomach empty and full of eggs.
Yeah,
and
I mean, most of the fish. The
male ratio was high.
Yeah, we talked about it before.
Yeah. Like 8 or 9 to 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me, well, and anyway. we also get you know, talking about, like, so iAngler, you can absolutely use it as your own logbook. And, you know, we all know moon phase and that kind of stuff affects fish. Tide, of course, affects them. But, you know, the more and more you build these database logbooks for yourself, you can find out some correlations in why the fish bit when they did. And that's one thing that I've done personally with iAngler is I log all the fish I catch just for my own personal records. And unfortunately, there aren't that many records in there because I don't go fishing enough. I just talk about it every day.
I think we're all, I think we're getting that way here too. Yeah. We're so busy with everything.
You know, hunting's the same way. You look at weather patterns and whatever.
Now, I do want to mention something real quick, Dave, because my good friend Roy Boyd up here at Westside, he's watching right now, and he's paying attention, and he's saying, you know, he wants to get involved. So maybe we'll reach out to him after the show, you know, see what he can do up there to help us out, help you out, you know, with CCA and getting some data collecting, things like that. Roy's a really good friend of mine. I've known him my whole life since I was 18 years old or 16. We were best friends when I was a kid, and I'm glad to see him doing it up there. I'd like to see him get more involved. So if we can help him out a little bit, let's try to do that. You know what I mean?
That's exactly right. And that's what I'm talking about with like the 7 months and all the partners. I'm not looking for cash from the soul. It's free for everybody to participate. Yep. We're looking for donations and promotion.
We just want help. That's it. You know, we just want help, you know,
count us in to help you. That's absolutely for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so we'll bring everybody together. Everybody's welcome. It's what it's all about. And we're going to have some fun with this event. And in fact, there's plenty of other fun stuff we're going to do, too. You want to talk a little bit about habitat?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about some reef balls, man. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, yeah. So a big part of what CCA does is, again, educating folks, getting them engaged, and promoting, you know, responsible use of the outdoors. And we can sit here and debate all day long about what's happening with these fish and who should catch what and what the rules are and all that, because that's a big part of conservation. But you know, you got to give back and recognize what produces these animals as well. And you got to have healthy habitat, clean water. I was going to say earlier when you were talking about the yellow perch, you know, as soon as the watershed has about 10% impervious surface in its watershed, yellow perch populations have been observed to decline. And that's the on land impact of these fish. Well, now you add your invasive species like we've been talking about.
Right.
Now you're getting squeezed from both sides. So we absolutely need to fix things on land. It is paramount, but it's not an excuse to say let's not do important things in the water as well.
Right.
And, you know, we're heavily involved in oyster management and all the complexity of that. Last night I was on the Oyster Advisory Commission. I'm on that. I'm trying to.
How do you have time for all these boards that you're on? Jeez, a week. Do you have like four mini knees that you send around or what?
I have a patient wife, and it's my job. I mean, it really is. So because of our members, I'm able to participate in all this stuff. And boy, do I talk a lot and stare into a computer screen a lot. But so habitat, right? That's where before COVID, we would get out. It's called the Living Reef Action Campaign is our program. Started in Carroll County with students building reef balls in elementary schools. We have a enclosed trailer full of molds. It's actually being borrowed by the Chesapeake Bay Environmental Center right now. Big shout out to Vicky in Graysonville. And we work with all sorts of different organizations and corporate partners, but mostly schools, to educate kids about why clean water is important, how the watershed works, how oysters help clean the water. Yes, they're also a seafood. How underwater grasses are important. They help crabs, other seafood. You know, you got baby rockfish and perch and everything in this big system, right? Well, oysters are a keystone species. They're a very big, important part of the bay, of course, and our heritage and our culture. And there's something called a reef ball. So a reef ball was created by the Reef Ball Foundation. We work with them. We buy molds from them. And using these molds, we get kids to build reef balls. So we teach them all sorts of stuff inside and in the classroom. And we go outside and they actually roll up their sleeves, set up molds, mix concrete, work in teams, and make these reef balls. Well, once they're made, they harden overnight. We remove the molds. We throw them on a trailer. We go and store them to put into the water. Well, we've got a brand new website we put together thanks to support by the Reef Ball Foundation. Our National Habitat Trust, the Building Conservation Trust, which is an important part of CCA that helps fund habitat programs everywhere, and a really, really cool partnership we have with the No Shoes Reef Foundation. So any Kenny Chesney fans out there? Oh, Kenny yeah. created yeah. the No Shoes Reef Foundation to help build reefs and improve ocean habitat throughout the world. So we're fortunate enough to have him be a board member of our National Building Conservation Trust and work with his foundation. So they actually help pay to develop a brand new website. It's ccamd.org/habitat. And
this is the new webpage, right, Dave?
Yeah, this is the new part of the CCA website. Yep. So it's ccamd.org/habitat. And couldn't do it without, you know, our great friends at the No Shoes Reef Foundation and Reef Ball Foundation. So the whole point of this page is to try and tell the story of habitat conservation and why it's important and how it relates to clean water. And then the action we can take. So the action we have been taking is this Living Reef Action Campaign. And if, when you scroll down on that page, you'll see some pinpoints on a map. And I'm a visual guy. I still order from the menu, you know, from the pictures on the menu at Bob Evans. And, you know, so I like these maps and these pictures.
Me too. Especially at the Mexican Chinese restaurants.
Yeah, you gotta.
That was a good one, Dave.
Sorry, I took us off track there for a minute.
It's okay. We needed to do that.
So, but you'll see a map on there. You'll also see some underwater footage of one of the reefs we've already built, and that's from just west of Tillman Island. So we put over reef balls with oysters attached to them. They're hatchery grown oysters, but natural, you know, the native species, and they grow these reefs. And there's actually been some recent studies, and I know you all had Johnny Shockley on a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, he's a good
ago.
Dude.
Johnny's a great guy and a visionary. Yeah. Johnny's been working so hard on the nutrient removal stuff he was talking about on the podcast.
I was blown away by that, like the whole stock and payment and the way that thing would work out and all that. I mean, that blew my mind, you know? I wonder how many oysters Conowingo Dam's going to have to buy.
Right? Well, that's the way it should be. You know, it's so important to do things that actually create a net benefit, a positive benefit, and not just spend money on something just to spend money on something. And that's what we really try and do. We try and advance the science of what we're doing. We're engaging the community to do it, to build reef balls. The Tillman Island Reef and also the Bill Burton Pier in Cambridge both have reef balls that are the same size. They're called a mini bay reef ball. They're about 300 pounds. And both are covered in oyster spat originally and then deployed. And both were deployed by the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. They've got a special boat, Patricia Campbell, that does this work.
Yep.
And we're great to have them as a partner to do this. And most folks that fish the Bill Burton Pier don't even know that there's a reef at the end of it. And on both sides.
They do now. They do now.
Yeah.
I won't be able to get my spot no more, Dave. Thanks. No, just kidding.
Well, and so we have applied for a really cool grant that we'll talk about if we get it. But you can guarantee that we're going to be focusing on habitat throughout 2021. We just had McGuire Marine Construction, the Mangatee River Association, just pitched in to deploy reef balls, I think, 2 weeks ago in the Mangatee River. I know there's a picture on our Facebook page, and that was a volunteer effort. A volunteer showed up at a reef ball build at a middle school in Arundel County. He showed up and he goes, "Hey, Dave, I wanted to help out today." I said, "Great. Thanks, Colin." Shows up. He gets to work. We built the reef balls. Well, about midway through the reef ball build, he says to me, "Hey, Dave, what are you going to do with these?" I said, "I don't know. You got somewhere you want to put them?" He said, "Well, I volunteer for the Mangatee River Association, and I work down at Cypress Marine. Can we have some to put in a reef in the Mangatee River?" I said, "Yeah, let's go." So over the next month and a half, we ended up delivering, I think it was like 115 of them or so.
Wow, that's
down there. They put 100 of them in the Mangatee just 2 weeks ago.
Wow. And
where do you take them, Dave, where do you take them to get the spats planted on them?
So in the Mangatee River situation, there was no spat on these. And it's all a matter of scheduling and a lot of complexity, funding, of course, too. But so with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, they have an oyster restoration center in Shadyside. So they're the ones we've worked with to set spat on reef balls before. We stockpile the reef balls there and then, you know, set a block in their schedule. They actually order the spat. One year it came from Horn Point.
I was going to ask, did Horn Point do anything?
Yeah. So the Horn Point spat, you know, that they grow their larval oysters, they literally put it in a FedEx container, ship it across the bay overnight, ends up in Shadyside, and and you know, CBF does this stuff for spattle and shell as well, and there's others that do spattle and shell throughout the bay, and ORP, of course, working with Horn Point. But it's the same concept. You put the larval oysters in the tank of water that's been brought up to temperature. They're pumping the creek water in, so it's, you know, natural. It has algae in it. Once they know that the oysters have set, it, you know, it takes a couple of days to look at some sample shells they put in there under a microscope and see if the spat have set. And if they have, they know that they've set to the reef balls too. So at that point, they'll let the water out and then start circulating new water that has the algae in it that the, you know, the spat oysters can start eating. And then we load the reef balls on the deck, keep them wet, run them out to the reef site, and they drop them to the bottom, and they're in their forever home and happy as can be. So the Tillman site and the Bill Burton site were actually studied by folks at Horn Point. And there's this national panel on nutrient mitigation I think Johnny may have talked about. And they actually studied those reef balls to figure out how much nitrogen and phosphorus they could take out of the water. So the actual reef ball was studied as well as a kind of a flat oyster bar. Yeah, so we actually know that the Tillman reef balls did a little bit better. They have a higher density of oysters on them. People were catching black sea bass there all summer. They were keepers.
That was the thing I wanted to ask you. Like, do you follow up and go down and check these reef balls out to see how they're doing after they've been dropped? I mean, is that something that they do to like monitor them? I mean,
yep. So how about videos? Yeah, the video you see on the habitat page is from Ten Island Scuba. They do training scuba dives and they take people out there.
Okay,
They've got videos from nighttime, daytime. And so we rely on that. Stevenson University is doing a dive study.
Who was that again? You just set up in Kent Island.
Kent Island Scuba, Brad King.
Okay, let's give him a little plug.
They've been volunteering their time, and in fact, we actually dropped a reef of concrete pipe back in February of 17 in Tangier Sound on a triangle shaped reef site. So that was like pipe reef, very similar to what they do off in Ocean City with Ocean City Reef Foundation, and we're looking for actually divers to head down there.
If I'm thinking correct, down in Ocean City, Monty Hawkins, he plays a big role with you guys down there. Am I right?
Yep. Okay. And in fact, I'm on the habitat page, you can see there's a link to Ocean City Reef Foundation, where Captain Monty leads. And very soon there's going to be a lot more spots open up on the map. So they're going to be reefs, and we're working with Monty to tell the story of the work he's doing. He actually has a really cool product called a reef pyramid, where there's going to be more molds available soon, and there are these fiberglass molds that we'll leave at concrete sites, like either a mixed plant or a construction yard,
right?
Because every truck always has a little bit of extra concrete, and a little bit of extra concrete isn't exactly practical for a reef ball build. We usually just go from scratch out of bags or mix from scratch.
Now, you were saying earlier, I want people to realize how simple this is. How many bags of concrete were you telling me before the show that you need to use to make a reef ball? It's not a lot.
No, it's about 3.
Yeah, 80-pound bags?
Yeah, it depends what size. We build a couple different sizes.
So cost-wise, you're really talking like $12 to pour this thing.
Yep. And a big part of what we have to invest in, of course, is we have 2 enclosed trailers. In fact, the second enclosed trailer was originally built for Southern Maryland, but with COVID hitting, we couldn't do any work in Southern Maryland. So late last October, actually, we built with Straight Edge Construction. So their company in Salisbury, Brian, their owner, called me and said, "Hey, Monty Hawkins told me you guys build reef balls and put them in the bay. I want to learn about how to do that." Well, it wasn't a month later, I showed up in his driveway. He volunteered all his time, bought everybody lunch, brought his employees out, and we built reef balls at his house in October. Those reef balls are going to go to the James Island reef site right outside of Chrisfield in 2021. So we've got all these kinds of things happening. The bottom line is, with the Living Reef Action Campaign, it just takes a couple folks and say, "Hey, I want to help. How can I help?" They reach out to me. My email is david@ccamd.org. And we try and work together to fit it in my schedule. Danny Wynn of Acme Tile. Danny's actually stepped up to be a partner this year.
Very good.
Yeah, and we're going to build reef balls with him. I'm not sure if it's going to be the Salisbury location or Cambridge, but we're working with him. Cool. We got a great donation of concrete thanks to him and his brother-in-law from U.S. Concrete Products. So, I mean, CCA is a grassroots organization that can only do what we can because of really generous volunteers and folks that say, "Hey, I got an idea. Let's see what we can do." So my job is to make those ideas into reality by working with great partners, and that's what the reef ball thing's all about, and we're really excited. There's going to be a lot more to talk about as the year progresses in the Lower Eastern Shore.
It's good stuff, man.
Hopefully, once we see the light at the end of the tunnel with all this COVID stuff and schools, we'll get back into the schools. But we're just not there yet, so I'm filling my time with all sorts of other good stuff.
You got plenty to do, that's for sure.
Let me interrupt a little bit real quick. So here's a little package we're going to give away from Old School Tackle Company, our good friend Brian Dolph down there. If you'd like to get this pack of swim baits here, I'll give that to you. Just what do you want to put in the comments, Eddie?
How about the great invasive count?
I like it. So the first person to write the great invasive count in the comments, you get that bag from Old School Tackle Company. Dave, while we're talking,
I make that comment?
I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. I had my face.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to get that plug in there real quick. I know we're getting up on time and stuff like that. So
no, that's great. No, it's, you know, bottom line, there's so much great stuff we can do together, and I look forward to helping you guys out with your Snakehead stuff this year, your tournaments and your club. I plan on being a member.
Yeah. So so while we're mentioning that, Eddie, why don't you go ahead and let's just bring everybody up to date where we are with the tournaments, the Snakehead Club, what we got going on.
Real quick, Nicholas, you got the baits.
All right, Nicholas, I'm not even going to try to say last name. You got it, Nick. It's yours, baby. you might kick my ass. I say it wrong.
All right, so that's right. Just a reminder on our tournament dates, we got the first one May 1st. Mark them on your calendar. June 19th, July 31st, and September 18th. So.
And we're still looking for sponsors. You know, if you want to be a corporate sponsor, things like that. Yeah, we're working about a lot of stuff out. We got a lot of stuff available. If anybody wants to sponsor categories, Calcuttas, anything like that, reach out to us. We got a lot of people reaching out now.
Yeah, we'll have a more official announcement once we have all the details worked out. But just mark your calendars because it's coming.
And tell them a little bit about the Snakehead Club.
Oh, man. That's on a different page. We ain't even there yet. Okay. I'm just kidding.
No, you've got to turn the page.
Well, no, because we're going to give them a discount if they join everything, right?
That's exactly right.
We want to bring that up to them, you know what I mean?
But no, we're starting the Snakehead Club, and it's going to be $50 for the year to enter it. And to join the club, and the tournament's going to be $60 each. So altogether, it'd be $290. But we're going to give you a discount if you want to do all of them at once, and that'd be get it all for $250.
Yeah, so that's a hell of a deal. So
yeah, for sure.
Get everything, get all four tournaments and club membership. I mean, you can't beat that. You know, that's a pretty good price where I'm from. I know that.
Exactly right.
And the thing about the club, because everybody's been asking, do they have to come here for the meetings? No, you don't have to come here for the meetings. No. What we're going to do is if you're a club member, you can watch the meeting live, you know, from here, wherever we're going to hold it at or whatever. Right. So if you're in Western Maryland or you're in California and you want to be a part of the club, you can do that. And all you have to do is just be wherever. Yeah, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, anywhere. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, maybe California.
I mean, South America. I don't care. You know, Indonesia, wherever you want to be.
Taiwan.
Yeah, come on. So, I mean, this would be a good way for us to network with one another. And the good thing is we will broadcast our meetings live.
What we want to do is to bring the community of the serious Snakehead anglers together. That's what this is really for. The everybody who wants to interact with each other, learn some new tricks from each other, and really build this community of the diehard Snakehead anglers. That's what we're looking for in the Snakehead Club.
I think it's going to be great. We're going to have special guests each month. You know,
guests,
going
to prizes,
giveaways every meeting. Yeah. You know, so we're working on the venue now, trying to iron all that out. You'll be able to get hopefully something to eat when you come if you want to do something like that. You know, we're going to try to make it really convenient for everybody. And we figured that if we did the live broadcast, that would make it convenient for everybody. Yeah, you wouldn't have to be here, you know?
So, I mean, we know Snakeheads are all over the place. They're all over Maryland and up and down the East
Coast.
To ask
a guy to drive from West Virginia or Frederick to come here for a meeting for an hour.
It's just unfeasible. Yeah. So we're,
and as long as COVID's in place,
right,
and it's impossible to do anyway.
Right. So we're just trying to make it as easy as possible.
How many people can be there. But if you're a member of the club, you can watch it on the internet.
That's right. You join the live stream.
And the other thing, too, you know, we said, you know, if you join the club, you know, we might even offer some discounts here on Tackle, you know, and things like that.
Right, yeah, we got some other stuff we're working through.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got a lot of stuff that we're looking to step up the game this year in the Snakehead ground and, you know, really, really put some stuff out there, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. It'll be a good year of fishing.
For sure.
I heard, Dave, something about Kenton Arrows maybe shutting something down up there. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, so another part of my job is my lobbyist hat. So technically, I'm a grassroots lobbyist, meaning I'm...
How many hats do you have?
It's like 3,582. I'm counting now.
Too many. But it's a big part of what CCA has always done is track legislation and engage in you know, weighing in on stuff on behalf of anglers. And every once in a while, we're supporting different bills that we're trying to get passed. We're the ones that started a 365-day license by initiating legislation to do that. So the reason that your license is good for the entire year is because of CCA. So this year, there's lots going on. It's a virtual legislative session right now, so it's a bit different. But there was just a bill introduced. It's House Bill 1117, so 1117. And what it does is prohibits people from fishing on the right-of-way, within the state highway right-of-way at the Kent Narrows Bridge, is what the bill says.
So that would mean you can't fish off the bridge. Is that what I'm kind of feeling here?
That's what I understand, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and it's what happens with the legislative process is, you know, any delegate or senator can draft a bill and propose that. This is Delegate Arendt's who's a Middle Eastern Shore delegate. And, you know, there's always a reason. So, you know, I always tell people, number one, reach out to the delegate or the senator that would introduce it. Their staff are great. They, you know, they work really hard. You just got to be respectful and say, hey, can we understand more about this? And if you go on the General Assembly website, you can find out a lot more and just Google that.
Roy Boyd, hold on, Roy Boyd. I just want to get in here real quick to make it off, Dave. Roy Boyd, you won the Rob. Yeah. That was his 12-4. Roy Boyd, 12. You got 4. It. You got it.
There you go. Nice.
Awesome.
Sorry, Dave.
So the website. The bottom line is Maryland General Assembly website is mgaleg.maryland.gov. But you can Google it and figure that out and look for House Bill 1117. I forgot to look in, but for the process wise, the bill is introduced and then it goes, is assigned to a committee. And so in the House, it's the Environment and Transportation Committee. And so I'm looking up when the hearing is going to be on this bill because folks can absolutely just follow along. The committees have an opportunity for you to sign up and provide written testimony or oral testimony. And so give me 1 second, almost there.
So for those that want it or don't want it, either can come to this hearing and they can.
No,
they can't
come to the hearing because it's virtual,
right?
Well, okay. They can't come to. They can attend virtually.
Well, that's what I mean.
In the past, you would absolutely go down to the building, walk into the room, sign up to give testimony.
That's what we did, right, Gary?
We did that last year for the
kayaks.
Yeah. Now the way it works is I recommend just reaching out to the legislative staff. And they'll let you know what's up. And you have an opportunity. There's information all over the legislative website about how you engage. You can track bills. You can actually sign up for an account called MyMGA. That's what I do almost every morning. I'm reviewing this stuff. But the bottom line is you can give written testimony, and you have to submit it by 3 p.m. I think it's 2 days before the hearing. This hearing in the House is on February 25th at 1:30 p.m. So the meeting starts at 1:30. You may have to sit through a bunch of other bills, but it's either a matter of watching a Zoom or watching a YouTube live, and you get to follow along and at least hear what folks have to say. And remember, this is step one. The House hearing is number one. If there's a Senate version of this bill, then it will have to match, and the Senate committee will have to meet and deliberate over this. And then it has to go to the full House and the full Senate. And then both houses have to cross the bill over, and there's deadlines and all this complexity. So, you know, if folks are concerned about this, number one rule is just get involved. Talk to folks, be respectful, and try and understand why. And, you know, fishing access is important. You know, the Chesapeake Bay has, 11,000 miles of shoreline or something like that. There's only so much public access. So there's a lot of people.
We went through the same thing with the snakeheads here in Dorchester County. Yep. They went through the same exact issue. It's rough.
Yeah. Yeah, and CCA does take positions on these bills. In the next day or two, we should have our full website up that has all the stuff we're tracking and anything we've done. I've been so busy with that work that I haven't had a chance to update the website, but it's coming very soon. The bottom line is, if anybody has questions on this kind of stuff, they can reach out to me as well. I can type my phone number in the comments, but it's all over our website. And, you know, bottom line is, I want folks to be aware of what's going on. There's one other regulation out right now that people can weigh in on rockfish. Last summer, we had a 2-week closure in August. And by the management plan, all days in July and August are equal. But in reality, there can be more mortality at different days because of water temperature. Absolutely. In the summertime.
Absolutely.
Right? So there's a whole bunch of information on DNR's website right now. You go to the regulatory fisheries regulatory changes website, or you go to CCA and just scroll to the bottom, and we have some information we provided last October. Bottom line is Maryland DNR is looking for information up until February 16th. They want you to weigh in and say, do you support closure in July or closure in August? And there's a lot of complexity on this issue. By the science, if you're just looking at the data, probably makes sense to close in July. A lot of the charter boat captains are not happy with that because that's a big, important part of their business.
Sure.
And, you know, rightfully so. So same thing with tackle shops. They're saying, look, we sell so much equipment in July. Why would you close it then? And the reality is all this is really because of some complexity that happened in the last 2 years where we were all supposed to take reductions and kill less rockfish. Maryland DNR chose certain measures that placed the majority of the reduction on the recreational community. The commercial side was not really cut. And so it's a lot of complexity, and it's an allocation kind of battle. And frankly, you can go to our website and see our position on it. We were not pleased with Maryland DNR dividing people and saying that, you know, some people get two fish, some people get one. You know, it's not a debate to me amongst fellow anglers. I mean, I respect everybody's access, and you know, charter captains are such an important part of our industry, and they really wanted two fish. And, you know, I feel like the commercial guys should have given something up too. They didn't. But, you know, it's the bottom line is you need to weigh in on these topics if you really care. You need to show up at the meetings. That's why I got so involved with CCA as a volunteer before I was able to come on full time, because I cared and I just wanted to follow this stuff. So, you know, folks, keep an eye on these things. We're here to help you. I'm here to help you.
Absolutely.
Understand how to get engaged and be informed. I don't care if you're a member or not. My phone's always on. And we want you to join. We want you to get involved. And, you know, you see stuff about our organization, give me a call. You can talk right to me and understand exactly what we're up to. I got nothing to hide, and I'm here to, you know, just honored that I can work on behalf of recreational anglers every single day.
I think one of the biggest assets to the fishery that you bring is the same thing that we do, and that's that you're always available. You know what I mean? You make yourself available, and that's hard to do, especially with everything that I know we've got going on. I can't imagine what you've got going on compared to what we got going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he wears a lot of hats.
I know, right?
Well, and if you think it doesn't matter to your opinion or what you say, it does. I mean, yeah. I just made a comment to Johnny Motz out here in the parking lot during one of the tournaments that we had about the fact that the way the law was written with guards, you could, it was basically paddle or oar only, you know. And so if you had someone with a handicap that or physical disability where they couldn't paddle, but they could pedal,
you couldn't use it.
The way the law was written, you couldn't tackle, and took a little while, but actually it is law now.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's finally got signed and it came into effect, I think, in the first week of February.
I'll tell you what, that was a really cool experience for me to go up there and to do that with you that day, Gary. I mean, I'd never been to the Naval Academy. I just got to see them jets that day and ride a bus and go eat some Subway food. And it was a fun day.
He ran around that jet for 15 minutes looking for a place to put a quarter in.
I did.
You took Cavs on a field trip, huh, Gary?
I'm telling you, man.
Oh, you should have seen me. I was just walking around looking up at buildings like this, man. Like, wow, man, this is pretty cool, man. Gary, what's this place called? I don't know.
See, the bottom line is you're not going to change a single bit of regulation, legislation. You're probably not going to change anybody's mind arguing on social media.
Sure.
That's right.
And just like you all met, you know, the good delegate Mouth right there talked about, you know, about stuff with him, and he went and made changes. These, you know, the people we elect here locally, they're our neighbors. They're approachable. They're there. And you really have to think about the way you approach it and whether or not that's going to lead to an effective change. You know, if you're yelling at people and always frustrated and just arguing with people, guess what? People get sick and tired of dealing with you after a while. So I tell people all the time, they always say to me, Dave, how the heck are you such an optimist? I said, it's hard work, but it's a choice. And I try and stay positive and try and stay engaged, because otherwise, you know, what good is it? You might as well just go pound your head into the wall somewhere.
Yeah.
So respect your fellow angler, get involved. And you know, we're in it together whether we like it or not. So
wait, I don't know what the win is, but we're in it to win it, right?
We're in it to win it. We're in it to have some great snakehead tournaments. I can't wait to have a nice sandwich or something next time I come down to the store. It's
we
been
miss
too
you,
long.
Man. We miss you.
I can't wait to have dry feet again when I pick my boots back up.
That's all right. I bought this pair of ice muck boots like 2 years ago, right? I'm walking around the other day, and all of a sudden my foot's wet. I look down, man, and right there in that crease in the front, man, that thing done cracked wide open, man. I got mud inside my boot. I got water inside my boot. I'm going to call them muck people. Be like, what are you doing to me, man? I stopped. My feet still stink. Hey, I didn't think about that. Maybe the dog did do it. Blame the dog.
It was a mutt, not a muck.
Dave, let me just take a minute here to do some Snakehead 101 real quick, and we'll come right back to you. I want to reach out and just thank Brady Felch. You know, he sent us some baits to check out, and I finally got them. This is the box.
Packages, they're actual baits in there.
That's the name of the company, just so you know. You can check him out. It's really, really nice stuff. I tell you, so this is one of the baits here. You know, and we'll just try to show you that there. And Brady, I'm not sure if you're in here with us, but I'm sure if anybody has any questions, you can reach out to Brady Felch.
And
I'll tell you the thing that I like about is these hooks. They're no joke, man. I mean, these are some nice hooks on these things. The first thing I look at on a bait is hooks, especially from snakehead fishing, because you can tell right away. If I can bend them hooks with my fingers, just flex them a little bit, I know this ain't the hook for me. And I can tell looking at these hardened hooks that these are some really nice baits. Gary, show them that other bait. We got a couple baits here. He sent us four baits. And
got a double spinner or a double paddle at the bottom or two.
And I mean,
got a little bend in it, and the other ones.
Look at the thickness of them hooks, you know? I mean, them hooks. I mean, show them people. Yeah, I mean, good gosh. A hell of a hook there, you know what I'm saying? Ow!
Let's go ahead and take a bite.
That's nice. Under heavy hooks. They really are.
Yeah. They look really nice, Brady. We're looking forward to trying them out. So, yeah, so if you think about it, reach out to Brady. I did want to tell you that we got the Savage gear, the Hollow Ducklings, and the 3Ds, and the ones with the legs.
It's almost time for ducks.
It's almost time for ducks. So, you know, you might want to get in and stock up on these while we got them out now before they're gone. This is one of my favorite baits, and I know several guys here that fish here that love this bait too. One of the coolest things about these baits is when the legs, the way they just kind of paddle across the top when you're reeling them.
What are they doing?
They just paddle across the top when you do.
The coolest thing about them is when a fish hits them.
That's right.
And don't forget, you know, you got Daryl Willie, his addiction baits, you know. We've got a lot of that stuff. We've got some stuff coming in here. You got an order with him yet, Eddie? What's going on with that? We've got some stuff coming down here.
Yeah, it's coming.
And don't forget about Old School Tackle Company. This is going to be a lure to reckon this year, I'm telling you. I mean, this the color of these things is just amazing. Can't really.
The video doesn't do it justice. You got to see it in person.
And the hooks are really nice. But like we said, we're going to test this wire out here on this spinner and see if that holds up. But I'm really anxious to try these out. These swim baits that the Old School Tackle's making, they're beautiful. Very, very nice. And then we just finished stocking up a bunch of MEPs.
Still got more coming.
So, yeah, we still got more coming. But get down there, and we got the MEPs in. Somebody was asking me earlier today what is literally my two favorite color patterns to use. And for me, I like bright stuff. You know, one of my favorites is Fire Tiger. You know, I like that. And then my second favorite, everybody laughs, is my Hot Pink. And I'll tell you what.
They're not laughing at the lure. They're laughing at you.
I know. But this thing catches a lot of
fish. These little things here are cool. They got a pretty good pattern. I don't know if you can see it on there.
Yeah, it is neat.
I would call this one Mad Mouse.
He looks pretty angry, doesn't he? He looks pretty angry there.
That one, the pink one, looks like a hog head.
This one kind of looked like, I don't know, like it's like a serpent. Yeah,
it looks like one of those marshmallows Kaz was talking about.
That's right.
The pink marshmallows. I forgot all about that. Oh, my gosh. And don't forget, a swim bait can be your best friend this time of the year, and so can a twister tail, and so can, we just got a big stock of these. These are called elastics, okay?
Hyperelastics.
Hyperelastics. They got a blade on the back that spins when you reel. This is my cousin Ricky's new favorite bait that's all used last year pretty much. And let me just tell you what. This is what we like about them. You see a snakehead can pull. Look, I mean, I'm pulling this thing, man. It ain't going nowhere, you know? If you want a piece of plastic going to hold up, there it is right there. I'm telling you that right now. And don't forget, you got my good friend Truong out there, SS Customs. Look, man, you want some buzz baits?
It's getting time, folks. You better stock
these
up.
These buzz baits here are incredible. My friend Brett Clayton, I remember we were field testing these things, his third cast, got a giant snakehead on one, a northern snakehead, not a giant, but a big northern snakehead on one of these buzz baits. I think that's all I got on Snakehead 101. If anybody wants to reach out to Brady Feltz, please do that. I'm going to reach out to him and see what we can do about getting these in the store down here so that we can get these out down here and get a bunch of them in the work so we can get some reports back for him. What else?
And that's Snakehead 101.
And that's Snakehead 101. Anything else? You got anything to add to it?
That's it.
When's the snow going to melt so I can catch a snakehead?
Well, we'll go yesterday. Get some.
Well, look Dave. If you want to, if you just want to come on down here and go bluegill fishing, we can make sure we can do that for sure. We can definitely do that. I'll tell you what, our last trip over there, dude. I don't know what happened to them things since last year, but I'll tell you right now. God dang! I mean, some of them suckers that we had a couple weeks ago, Gary. I mean, I ain't kidding you. They were 2 inches thick, man. I mean, that wide.
They called him Slash.
Called it a dinner plate.
Yeah. I'll let tender, loving care, Gary.
Yeah.
My wife feeds them every day, man.
I came out last week. Gary was laying on the bank with a straw blowing air in the water. I said, "What's going on, man?" He said, "I came out here and checked the oxygen levels were down, bro." Yeah. That's how dedicated he is, man. You know what I mean?
It's amazing. You don't realize how much walking around a waterway. Just on your ground, how much noise that you make. My wife, our deck is, or our house is about 75 feet from the pond. The deck is about 50 feet from the pond. And when my wife walks out on the deck in the morning, it's little ripples coming across the water. Just little Vs everywhere. Those fish can feel in that ground her walking across that deck. And know it's breakfast coming.
Before I forget, anybody that's looking for a replica mount, snakehead. Oh, look at that, Brady. Bit the first cast, man, huh? So, look, if you need a mount, a
replica. You can reach out to Barry Taylor, 717-577-7437. It's $20 an inch, six-month turnaround. So get on the list if you've got a PB you want to get mounted up. And we'll get that taken care of, too. Dave, you got anything else for us before we can sign off here today?
No, sir. I'm going to go cook dinner.
What are you making? We might be over.
I don't know. Good question. Maybe probably some deer. I do have some deer in the freezer. So.
We could bring cheesesteaks. Right. We could bring cheesesteaks, man.
I'd rather
beer. Did you get a second deer this year? Did you get
second? Oh, no.
Huh? When you come and get your boots, let me know, man. I'll hook you up a little bit.
You're the man.
I had a good year this year.
You did have a good year. You did.
Yeah.
So just some forecasting here. We've got some really, really good guests coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Got Rob Fryer. He's going to be coming back in here to talk about his hunting season. We got some people from some really, really big companies that are going to be in here talking. Got some stuff talking with Woo Dave's right now. You know, I'm trying to get him in here on the podcast, trying to work something out there. Dave McMullen, you know, working some stuff out with him there. The Wally Pog, we're going to bring him in, get him on the podcast too, talk about the Wally Pog. That's going to be a new snakehead lure down here that you all haven't seen yet. That's about all I got today, Eddie.
You don't have any one more?
I mean, I pretty much think I covered it all for once in my life.
It is February, so.
I was real like today. I really wish the deer season was still in.
Yeah, I know.
It's we get the snows 2 years in a row. The snow that we've gotten after deer season, it kind of stinks.
I think the coolest.
But, I'm ready for April.
I think the coolest thing here is I know you got a lot of geese over where you're at, Gary. But at night when I'm sleeping, man, I think the best thing about right now is hearing the geese fly. You know, there's just so many and they're so loud that when they go over, it's like an alarm clock. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I think the best thing about right now is?
What?
It's almost springtime. Winter's almost over.
That's a good point.
Yeah. March is kind of like, you know, it's just somebody couldn't deal with 11. When an even number. March doesn't give you a whole lot. Usually some bad weather and some cold days.
Right. All March means is February's over with.
That's right. It means we're going to be confused till April gets here.
Yeah.
So that's about all I got today, folks. I don't have anything else.
Yep.
Anybody want to sing with me or what?
No, that's all you.
Okay. So as far as weekend goes, if anybody needs anything up there at the Merrill Line, please send me a message. We'll get you up what you need, and I'll get on the road tomorrow. Oysters, soft crabs. Got soft crabs by the boxes. Let me know what you need, and we'll get you what you want. Scallops. Don't be afraid to ask. So I'm going to leave you all with a little crabby jingle. My crabs, they have three first names. It's heavy, full, and fat. My crabs, they have a fourth name. Absolutely monster packed! So if you ask me where they're from, they're 100% guaranteed Maryland number ones. At the crab stand, here's a fact. I know for sure you're coming back. Kapow! Kapow! Kapow!